Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 39. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, girls.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a very roarous applause.
So what's up with everybody? Everybody cool?
Yes, everything is great, and I am so excited that fall is here.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Although I really overdid it the other day, and I wore a scarf and boots, and it was 90 in the middle of the day.
I know. So I'm saying I'm excited that fall is here, but I'm sitting here in a tank top, shorts, and chanclas, and I was stopping to get a little morning snack on my way to work yesterday, and there was a woman that walked in, and she looked so cute in her long sweater and her like ankle length skirts and her calf height boots, and she looks so cute. But I was like, oh my God, it's so freaking hot. She really wanted fall fashion
right now. Yeah, the fall fashion. So right now I'm just wearing fall colors.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I look cute today.
I love that shirt.
Thank you. But yeah, and it's just like it's fall, and like I'm very perfectly aware, mostly from the tourists that come into the shop,
yeah,
that California winter is apparently not real winter.
Yeah,
either way, but it's real winter for me. So but I have learned that I can't tolerate anything under 70 degrees.
I know, it's like 68 and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so cold.
For me, I mean, while I'm working, I still have the fan on. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm looking forward to colder days for sure.
So the one thing I really like about fall is all of the horror genre comics that come out. We're getting a lot of them in right now, and I'm so excited to read them and been taking them home. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. What I don't like is how everybody's already like setting up decorations for Christmas.
Yes, no lie. Someone came in the other day to the shop wearing a Christmas sweater. And that was the day that the phone would not stop ringing because we were doing pre-release for Guilds of Ravnica. And I was like in between answering the phone, literally while I was on the phone answering questions, it would beep through because someone else was trying to call. Then there was a transient that came in and was like looking at books, and generally if they're not like bothering anybody or anything, I let them be, and you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But this woman proceeded to stand in the corner while looking down at her shoes with her mouth agape and saliva just running out of her mouth onto the ground. So I'm dealing with all these phone calls. I had to deal with that, not only asking her to leave, but then cleaning up the mess. And then as the straw that broke the camel's back,
the tip of the iceberg,
somebody walked in with a Christmas sweater. I was like, I'm not emotionally prepared for this day.
That, and look, Halloween exists for a reason, and there's a reason, and that is to separate freaking the encroaching celebration of Christmas from the rest of fall.
We still have Thanksgiving in between, too.
I know.
I mean, Thanksgiving is basically Christmas now.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why Halloween exists. And I am resentful of all the Christmas decorations I see because Halloween season is my fucking season.
Well, I did some Uber work. I would have to say like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago. And I saw somebody already setting up their Christmas decorations somewhere in like L.A., downtown L.A. I was really shocked. We were all shocked, even including my passengers.
Well, in the hood, I see Christmas decorations every day, so I'm not really sure what time of year it is.
Wow.
In the hood, the Christmas decorations are there because, one, they were too lazy to take it off, and two, sometimes the lights don't work, so you just got to work with something else.
So true. The light and on my street in front of my house is always out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll work for, like, 3 days and then it'll stop working.
So we've gotten way
way off topic.
Let's roll right into Chisme de la Semana.
Well, speaking of Chisme de la Semana, well, that was a little bit of Chisme that's happening here. Yeah. But all the way in the East Coast, New York Comic Con, the DC panel is going on right now. We're recording Saturday, so by the time this comes out, it's going to be a while.
Mm-hmm.
But They are planning for 2019 Flash Year One. So Year One, DC does this with quite a few of their titular characters.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, retellings of their origins. There's Batman Year One, there's Superman Year One, there's Teen Titans Year One, and recently Wonder Woman Year One.
Blech.
That wasn't that good. Sorry, not sorry, Grant Morrison.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's a story there. It just wasn't written good. Okay. Anyways, before I go off topic, they are going to be retelling Flash's origin, specifically Barry Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to be coming out in 2019, and the writer is going to be Joshua Williamson. There's a bit of a kind of hesitancy, or like they haven't really explicitly stated whether it will be like the other Year Ones, where it's kind of like a side series,
right, yeah.
Separated on its own. This one might be retold in the main series.
Interesting.
Itself. Maybe. We're not entirely sure. So it could either be in the main storyline, or it's going to be an offshoot like mm-hmm. all the others have been. Kind of, but basically all the Year Ones, sometimes they're two volumes, sometimes there's three, but they all retell the origins of the big superheroes and stuff like that. So Flash will be getting his own Year One comic, whether it'll be in his current run or as a separate side series, we won't know until later on. But that is my chisme.
Interesting. Cool. Nice. Well, I have a chisme. This is Sarah. I don't know if you guys know this, but this is really old chisme. Iron Fist season 2 came out. Netflix. Is anyone watching?
No, I'm not watching.
Is anyone watching?
No.
You know what?
Bueller.
Bueller.
You know what? Now that you mention it, I had been aware that I knew that there was a thing and stuff like that. I had not cared enough to find out whether it had come out or not. But, hey, you have informed me of something.
Here's the thing about Netflix Marvel TV shows. Eddie and I generally do it as our thing together where we sit down and watch. We are so behind. We barely started season 2 of
Daredevil?
No, of what's her name?
Jessica Jones.
We barely started season 2. We're probably only like 2 or 3 episodes in, and then it takes even longer because we start watching and I invariably lay down, and next thing you know, he's watched 3 episodes and I only saw the first half of the first episode. So the next time we sit down, we have to start over.
Oh my god,
that's terrible.
It takes a while.
That's terrible.
So I haven't watched that. There's a second we've seen season 2 of Daredevil. Season 3 is already coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there another Luke Cage season?
Season 2.
Have we seen that? I don't even know.
I totally saw that.
I don't even know if I
binged
have.
Binged the crap out of it. Had to put subtitles for the Jamaican stuff. But it was so worth it.
No.
I even watched it in Spanish.
I don't
my
think
husband.
I have.
That's great.
So I'm so far behind, and I know that. I did see Defenders.
Okay.
but I knew that Iron Fist was coming out. I've heard that it's way better than the first season. I didn't hate the first season. It was boring a little bit in places, but I was entertained. So I'm not watching it because I'm not interested. I'm super interested. I actually like Iron Fist, but I'm just so behind on everything.
Mm-hmm. I like my Fraction Iron Fist.
Yes, that's the Iron Fist I like.
Yeah, and I like Colleen.
Oh, yes. So I heard that the end of Iron Fist is like an amazing... Whoever was in the shop talking to me about it was saying that the end of Iron Fist pretty much leaves it open for Daughters of the Dragon.
Ooh, uh-huh. Okay.
And so I'm interested in that.
Okay, maybe I'll check it out.
I'm literally interested in everything but actual the actual main character.
Right.
Just cut him out and I might watch it. Yeah.
And I heard somewhere that they're not doing a second season of Defenders. I don't know if that's true, but that is chisme that I read somewhere on the internet, and I really liked Defenders.
Well, they might do Invaders.
Okay, well.
Or they might keep switching the team name up.
I just really think that Danny and Luke are kind of like there's a lot of potential there for them to do, like, even like a buddy cop comedy.
but that's what they are.
Exactly.
The comics.
Exactly.
Like, and I think that's what's so sad about the Iron Fist TV show and stuff like that is that they haven't developed their friendship.
Yeah.
And that's one of the really cool things between that. And they're definitely going with a different love interest route for Iron Fist.
Yes.
Because in the comics, it's him and, oh my God, what's her name?
Misty,
yes, yeah. It was Misty Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, it's something. I was gonna call her Monica Rambeau. And I was just like, no, that's original Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Well, not original Captain Marvel, but like the second person technically to take up the name. Anyways, side note. and I had really liked that in comics.
Mm-hmm, me
been,
too.
It had been cute, but and I had also liked Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, but now it's different.
That's very upsetting.
Now it's Luke Cage and Claire, and I really liked that one. I was just like, oh, they pulled this
off. Well, at the end of season two of Luke Cage, they changed that love interest.
They do?
Yeah.
Tell me.
No!
No! No! I just want to point that out, that there is a change.
I thought they were really cute.
Yeah. Nah, I don't like Night Nurse for anybody. She's just the Night Nurse, okay?
No, there's a really powerful scene in there, which explains why the end is the way it is. Mm-hmm. But it was a real powerful scene. I had feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was our chisme. Guys, it's that time again, Kristen.
you're not as excited about it as you should be, but yeah. Sarah, it is beer time. I think Sarah means to say that it's nap time.
Sorry, guys, the coffee's not kicking in. But yes, it's beer time.
So
there you go. There's that enthusiasm.
Sarah actually brought this beer all the way back from her trip to Ensenada?
Ensenada, yeah. Rosarito.
Okay. And the name of this brewery is so cool. It's called Agua Mala. That's translated to what, like bad water? Or
yes.
Okay. So that sounds so cool. And the name of this beer that we're drinking is actually called Astillero. And we looked it up because Sarah wasn't sure either what it meant, but that translates to shipyard. And Sarah was actually describing that the brewery itself, you were saying, is made out of a whole bunch of like shipping containers.
Containers, yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so makes sense, the name of the brewery. But Astillero is the name of the beer that we're drinking today. It's an Imperial IPA, and it is 7.2 ABV. It mentions on the paper that we have that there's a lot of tropical notes and very citrusy, that there's like some, it says hierbas, so that's like
that's
weeds.
Like weeds. some type of weeds.
Yeah.
Herbs.
Yes.
Okay.
Herbs. Oh, thank you.
Well, my grandmother always used to say, she was like, oh, bien got the hierbas. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, in this
yes,
case,
you're
it is
right.
It's herbs. Yeah, you're right.
It could be there were weeds or herbs.
Okay.
Yes.
And a little bit of caramel. I prefer, I kind of think that gives it some character to say that we're drinking weeds.
Yeah. Some wheatgrass.
So it says here that there's very expressive aromas. Let's see. Tropical fruit, herbs, caramel, and then let's see, the color is like a color of honey, it says.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of it's not see-through.
No.
There is some opaqueness to it.
Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a reddish hue honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know, it's because I actually said the word honey, but it actually kind of smells honey-ish.
Yes.
Yeah, it smells like, I think, I definitely smell like caramel. Caramel.
So, Cervecería Agua Mala is in Ensenada, Baja California, Mexico, Carretera Ensenada, Tijuana, a kilometer 103, oh wait, kilometer 103-999, Colonia El Sausal de Rodríguez, Código Postal, or
zip code
22760.
So that's their address?
So yes, this is their address. So let me tell you how I found out about this brewery, because my intention was not to... My intention was, when I went there, was to have micheladas, you know, because that's what they're
gross.
Known. They're known to prepare them very well. Yeah. Well, anyway, these girls do not like micheladas, but whatever. So that was our intention, you know, drink Indio or whatever and have micheladas.
What's Indio?
Indio is a type of, it's a beer that they have in Mexico. Oh. They have it here too.
Okay.
It just tastes better in Mexico for some reason. Mm. Anyway, that was our intent. But then my cousin and I went to a can release at Monkish, of all places. And we had gotten our beer cans, and we were walking back to our parking spot. And this guy behind us, an older man, said really loudly, because I'm sure he wanted us to hear. He was like, that was some good beer. And we're like, yeah, Monkish is really great beer. He's all, you guys got the cans? And we're like, yeah. And he said, you know, the best beer I've ever had in my life is called Astillerio. And I was like, where did you find that? He's all, it is in a brewery on the main road from Encina, Rosarito, or vice versa. I keep forgetting. And I'm like, oh, we're going there next week. Where exactly is it? He goes, you can't miss it. It's on the right side off of the main road. And I'm like,
Interesting.
I'm gonna have to look that up. And so fortunately, my husband had GPS in Mexico, and we put it as our destination. It was the best, like... side. It was right off the main road. Like, it was perfect.
His description was accurate.
It was accurate. I thought he was messing with me, but there's a big sign that says
Agua Mala.
You can't miss it. And it was the best. I mean, we were almost gonna not go because it was already kind of late, but we stopped, and it was really beautiful. It was like you said, like I told you guys, it was the shipping containers, and the murals on the containers were awesome.
Oh, there was
they
nice
have ones. Yeah, they, it's kind of like a ship sea kind of theme, so they had like mermaids and jellyfish. Cool. Murals and stuff, and it was
did
just
you take pictures?
Yes, I cool. took pictures. I will be sharing them on our Instagram. But it was like they had a bunch of beers on tap, and then they bottle, they don't can them. So I was like, it was like overwhelming. It was awesome. They have great t-shirt designs.
Cool.
And the cool thing, it's Mexico prices. So I was like, yes.
Yeah. Craft beer at Mexico prices.
Yes.
I am getting my passport tomorrow.
Dude. Oh, yes. In pesos.
Oh, we have to go.
Oh, my. How much was that bottle?
It was like, I think it was like under $2.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
And so I was like, beer for everybody. And we got taster cups and everything. I mean, I was like, let's buy it all, you know, because, you know, it was pesos. But yes, I was so excited.
Do they have food?
Yes, they have food.
Oh my god,
they have. I'm gonna share the website because the food is amazing. So if you ever find yourself in Ensenada, Rosarito, you must go to this. And
what's the hour drive from Los Angeles?
Well, from Los Angeles, you got the Los Angeles to San Diego, right, which is what, 2 to 3 mm-hmm, hours depending on traffic, and then it's an hour in.
Okay.
So in Mexico, yeah.
Okay.
But it's off the main and only road, so anyway. Yeah,
it's like it's driving to the frontera. I've done that a few times.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm so excited now. It's funny because I started off kind of being about beer time, but now I'm like super pumped. I'm super pumped.
Well, did you try this on tap from...
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I was like, I was already buzzed because we drink on that trip. And so I get to like the counter and I'm like, do you have Astillerio? I'm like, you know, like all excited and loud and stuff. And
FYI, she's saying Astillero.
Because at the moment I was like, Astillerio, because I didn't know what the name was. And then he's like, yeah, we do. I'm like, you have it on tap? Yes. I'm like, give me a glass. And so it was just very exciting. But yeah. Anyway, what do you guys think?
I don't like it.
Oh.
I don't like it. I
love it.
I don't know what the taste is that I'm tasting that I don't like. But it's very harsh to me. That IPA aftertaste is the front taste.
Yes. Oh, that is exactly yes. what you are describing right yeah. now. Uh-huh. Oh my God. I was just like, what am I tasting right now?
Yeah.
And it's because usually the aftertaste of an IPA is the full blown taste that I'm getting right now. And that is all I can taste.
Yeah.
It smelled good.
It smells amazing, actually.
It smells
yes.
good, but I'm not saying I hate it, but it's definitely the taste.
For $2, I'd drink the fuck out of it. But
no, definitely. Look, if it was between this and Modelo, I would take
yes.
it.
Like, yes.
Oh, God. Well, yes.
Yeah. For $2 prices, give me the entire thing. That's it. Like, boom.
Right. Yeah.
But if this compared to the swap meet beer that we did last episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is not the biz.
And for Corona, Modelo, Dos Equis, all that, they have a certain quote-unquote Mexican beer taste to me, and for some reason this has that taste.
Do you think it's the water?
Maybe.
That's why it's called agua mala.
Damn. Okay, was that just like a burn?
Not an intentional one. They could have good beer that I don't know of.
Well, I only tried, the other one I tried was the, there was a oatmeal stout, I believe.
Ooh, yeah. How was that one?
It was really great. It was, it had oatmeal. A lot of, coffee in it. I liked it.
Oh, I'm down for that. I'm
Why
definitely
didn't bring
down for
that. One.
Well, no, we'll have to do an on-site episode.
Road trip.
And we got to order the food. I didn't have a chance to order the food because we had already eaten a lot of seafood.
Mm.
So I didn't. But I saw the plates that were coming out of the kitchen looked amazing. That's so,
right. Do they serve seafood? Because Kristen doesn't like seafood.
No. It was like burgers and like really meaty.
Good, good beer food.
Yes. Nice. Yes.
Nice.
They know their audience. So let's just go ahead and rate it since, you know, we already have strong feelings about it.
Okay, so this is Kristen, and I am going to go with an initial because I'm not that excited about it. And if I had a choice between this and any other beers, I probably would choose the other beers. Definitely the swap meets that we did last episode was way yummier. Like I said, if it's $2 a pint, I'm all about it.
I am gonna go with initial as well. I mean, I'm gonna finish this part right here. because if it didn't have that weird taste,
yeah,
because I can taste a little bit of like caramel,
yeah,
just a tiny bit, but the hoppy IPA taste is so strong that it literally eliminates anything else.
You know, and it's so weird, but I guess it depends on each palate because when I saw it on the board, mm-hmm. it had a lot of awards. Like, a lot of awards. This particular beer had a lot of awards.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if maybe
Could
it's our
be palate. Yeah.
Because I'm going to give it a full.
Okay.
It's not blowing me away, but
you like it.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely like it. I like the strong kind of sour aftertaste. I do.
Mm-hmm. You see, and that's the whole time. I don't like that taste. Mm-hmm. There's a reason I don't like sours. And I gave them that beautiful description last time. but this, if it was sour, it would have been a flaccid.
Mm.
Like, if this was just a little bit more bitter or sour, I would have been like, nah. That's it. We good.
Well, so Jen and I gave it a 2 out of 5, and Sarah is giving it a 4 out of 5. But I do think it's the brewery itself sounds amazing. It sounds beautiful. And Sarah printed out this little snippet about brewery itself. It says, immerse yourself and explore our history. Agua Mala emerges from a mixture of passion for the ocean, its biodiversity, and science, taking these elements as inspiration for our name and each of our labels. In 2009, the experimentation begins, and a couple of years later, we became the Mexican craft brewery that always seeks to offer something new and different. Experimentation is a fundamental part of our process to offer unique combinations. Our tasting room becomes the laboratory where we explore and have fun offering new aromas and flavors with an each of our beers, always respecting the profiles of each style. We are proud of our commitment to nature and its resources. Sustainability is the fundamental value that governs us, always looking for how to make each step of the craft beer process better and more sustainable. From beer cooking until our Agua Mala tasting room built in reused freight containers and the foods offered in this that seek to be fresh, nutritious, and selected with care to respect the use of local ingredients. So that sounds really cool. It sounds like they are doing a lot to give back to also the environment and to their community. So I would love to actually visit.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And find an Agua Mala beer that I like.
Yeah, same.
I'll take my $20 and spend all day.
Yeah, that's a lot of pesos.
Yeah. Actually, my husband was saying that he thought that the design of the tap room was like even better than some of the breweries and tap room CCs here in locally.
Yeah,
he
I mean, like, that it's was not every day you see a shipping container style tap room. Like, that's cool. That's interesting.
The only one I've seen here is a beer garden in Long Beach, I think off Atlantic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
They have a smog tap. And I think other local breweries, but they didn't put them on top of each other, made it two floors, which this brewery
Agua Mala did.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So that's been our beer review. All right, guys, we're ready to review our books. And because it's Halloween time, Halloween time, Halloween
this
time,
is Halloween,
this is Halloween, 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 Halloween,
Halloween.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, we have two books today. I'm not sure which one we want to do first, but I'm going to go ahead and start with the Phantasmagoria issue one that just came out. Was it last week? Week before? I don't remember, but...
I think it was 2 weeks ago as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So middle September. Mm-hmm. And this book is written by, you may remember, of Border Town fame, Eric Esquivel. And when he did the number one signing release event at Heidi Ho, I took some time to talk to him about this book because when I heard this book was coming out and I read it online somewhere, I was so excited because I'm such a huge fan of Creepshow.
Oh yes.
Oh my god, I love Creepshow.
Love the crap out of it. If you guys don't, of course, if you guys remember, this is Sarah, my very first comic book I ever owned for 10 cents was
10 cents?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Creepshow, the one that they based the movie on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I got it at a yard sale.
Oh, yeah. That's why I was great. Saying,
that's awesome.
I wish I still had it, and I'm probably due somewhere.
Oh, I have mine for sure. When Eddie and I first started dating, he learned quickly about me that horror is one of my favorite genres of TV shows and movies, and that Stephen King was one of my favorite writers. And so when he found that out, he actually gifted me a copy of Creepshow. And one of the very first Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Cons we went to, he brought the book with us, and we tracked down Bernie Wrightson there at the show, and wow. I had him sign it for me.
Oh my god, that's amazing!
Yeah,
well, points for Eddie.
Yeah,
wow, he really knocked it out of the park right there.
Yeah,
like if you didn't fall in love with them then, I don't know. That's awesome. That is so cool. As a matter of fact, I'm so glad you brought up San Diego Comic-Con, because this last one we just went to, they reprinted Creepshow, the one that I had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was really shocked about that. The color texture is not as good, but if you want like the full feeling, you could definitely go out and look for that one.
Mm-hmm. So when I heard that this comic was coming out and that it was in the vein of Creepshow, and I actually saw the cover and I was like, oh my god, yeah, this looks so amazing.
And the Creepshow and the EC Comics,
yes,
and
yes,
yeah.
So of course when it came out and when we were doing our October shows, like, we got to do this book. So it is just like Creepshow to me, like the the bruja that's in there, yeah. like the storefront person, and she's like mm-hmm. talking to you like you're the customer and like mm-hmm. Asking you like, what do you want to buy? I loved that part.
That was, oh, totally.
Like in between the stories. Stories. Yes.
The stories, yeah. And you get three stories in the comic.
Yes.
The ending, how it all like ties and loops together. So while I didn't grow up with like Creepshow and the EC comic stuff, I did grow up with the Goosebumps TV show.
Yes. Uh-huh.
The Twilight series.
Yeah.
The Twilight Zone. And there was one other one that I'm...
Outer Limits?
No, I don't think I ever watched Outer Limits. But there was one other show that was along the vein of, like, you have a narrator.
Yes, uh-huh.
Telling you something. Yeah. Like, we're greeting you and saying, like...
Nightmare on Elm Street?
No.
Okay, because...
Oh, the... little segue. But no, Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. A TV show. Like, the person would show you something yes. and then tell you the story that, about
that. That show, even though it was supposed to be, like, a cool thing, used to creep me out as a kid.
Yes, exactly. So just like these creepy stuff that reminds me of like it. And so that's why I really like that. I thought it was it's supposed to be like, you know, horror stuff like that, but I found it charming.
Now, the reason not only are we reviewing this book because obviously Latino, Latinx creators, but the content of the book are short horror stories that are all based on Latinx myth and stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've mentioned multiple times on the shows how every Latino has some sort of story about how their grandma or aunt or mom or someone saw La Llorona.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And they all have their different ways of like fighting the Llorona or getting away from her and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's multiple stories like that that are in different Latinx cultures. So mm-hmm. when I heard that that was the premise of this book and that it was a horror title, I was all in. And so having now read the first issue, I can't wait for more issues to come out.
Definitely. And what I really liked about these is that they didn't stick to a certain time period.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
because
yeah.
they traveled from modern to like 1800s, like California or Texas mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then like kind of to like 1980s, either California or Mexico and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so like you can kind of pinpoint time areas, but it was never specifically stated. But it traveled in between those, kind of like saying like these are old stories, these are new stories,
yeah.
but it's all... it was all really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the art is fabulous.
Yeah, the art's yes. awesome.
And the texture of the pages is like it kind of reflects on the art. It's kind of I don't know how to explain it, but the texture of the pages is almost part of the story. Like I can't explain it, but it's not like that regular shiny paper.
Oh yeah, no, it's we've talked about this before, about how some comics have better quality paper or they use like recycled paper and stuff like that. And this is definitely because I don't like it. Like Marvel is still using that glossy paper
yes. mm-hmm.
that like if you leave your fingers for too long, the ink will come off.
Yeah.
This has happened to me. This one, not so much. So it kind of has like that. Not exactly newspaper print, which is what a lot of older comics are,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of like it's kind of almost along that texture. And
right.
A lot of people like that.
I loved it. Yeah, I loved it with this artwork. It just seems so it kind of almost looks like the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
Like La Bruja, like I don't know, it just
I felt like
it all tied in really well.
That's
like,
a great mm-hmm. comparison. Yeah,
like I feel like they really thought about it, and it's like, we can't print this on shiny paper.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, no, you can't. Like I think they put a lot of thought into this. Maybe it's just a, you know, it's serendipitous or whatever.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I feel like they put
a happy
thought.
Accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I loved it. I love the first story. Oh my god.
Yeah, so
love
there's three the stories. Yeah. El Corazón Negro, Flying Coffin, and Put a Little Chile on It.
Yes.
So the first one, Corazón Negro is your favorite?
Oh god, I think I love them all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really can identify with Put a Little Chile on It. But I really loved the first one.
Yeah.
It was just really, I mean, they were laughing in Spanish instead of the H-A-H-A.
Yes.
J-A-J-A.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Loved it. I And then the ending, you know, yes. with the grandson.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, man. I just like blew my mind.
That happens to be my favorite one, too. And that's exactly why. When you see the grandfather realize that his passing on of the mantle relies on the fact that he has to give it up, quote unquote.
Yes, yes.
And the way that not just that the dialogue shares that with us, but just his the way that it's drawn and his defeat, you can just see. But he's doing it out of love. Mm-hmm. And in this story, it's death and craziness and, you know, everything. I got emotional at the end of that story. Yeah.
And it was sweet and it was endearing, and it talked about death and like moving on mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And there's like a bit of horror aspect in that as well, but it was definitely very touching.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean it was really great. I love the part where he's like, "What are we gonna play chess?" No. We're not going to play chess. We're going to wrestle. And I was like, oh, yes. And just the conversation itself while they're fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was just, I mean, because he's not the first luchador. I mean, it was his grandfather, mm-hmm. His father, himself, and now his grandson. Mm-hmm. But it was just, oh, so great. And then the way the artist showed the dynamic of the moves was really spot on. I loved it. I love that first story. It was awesome. But all the other ones are equally as awesome.
What was your favorite, Jen?
My favorite one was actually the last one.
Yeah.
And mostly because while the first one was very endearing and the second one was intriguing, I think the third one was the more horror-filled mm-hmm. one for me. Put a little chili on it, and I was just like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But mostly because of the whole, like, brujeria aspect everything. And, like, and I kind of, I very much grew up with that mm-hmm. culture.
Yeah.
And whether, like, what's good brujeria and what's bad brujeria and all that stuff. And so that's why
magia
I really
negra,
like that.
Magia blanca. Uh-huh. I love it.
You know what I find very interesting is that for most Latinx people who are religious, Catholicism is one of the main accepted religions widespread. But there is such an underbelly of santeria, brujeria.
Yeah.
I mean, as a kid, and not until
curandera.
I was a as a teenager, I started realizing all the books on my grandmother's bookshelf, and there were tons of witchcraft books.
Yeah.
Tons of witchcraft books. And my mom shares a story about my grandmother and her sisters doing certain
rituals
under the house in the basement.
What?
And and like she as a kid remembers going down there and like there being like a makeshift coffin that they had down there, and they were doing rituals around it because there was a my grandmother had a nephew who had cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. and they were doing like Santeria type rituals to try and like cure him, mm-hmm. and that there was like this doll that they made that was supposed to like symbolize him. And she said as a kid she would go and be playing around and she found it and scared the crap out of her. But in my mind, to like imagine and picture my grandmother like mm-hmm. doing these things as a young woman or even a middle-aged woman or whatever, it like blows my mind because she was so freaking religious.
Yes.
She did the rosary every night in bed.
Oh, uh-huh. my goodness.
And it's just like, and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't like until I was older that my mom like really got into about my grandfather was basically kind of like, not exactly a curandero, mm-hmm. but more like people would go to him for rituals and for I guess spells and stuff like that. Mm. And it wasn't until later, and so he was kind of like respected among the community that he was in. But I didn't really realize this until like my mom was just so like, oh yeah, like he like you, your dad, like your grandfather did a spell for me, or like a ritual that would help me find your dad in the U.S.
Wow.
And she swears to God
that it worked.
That it worked.
Yeah.
And I was just so like, what? I was just like, that's some. That's
I find some this so fascinating stuff. Of mm-hmm. of Latino culture. It's so fascinating.
And the fact that she's like, she was just like, oh, like that's okay. And that my grandfather wasn't Catholic,
mm-hmm.
but he believed in Catholicism as well, but along with a lot of older Mayan religions and gods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And my mom, to some degree, believes that too.
Yeah.
But she's very firmly Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're in Guatemala, she's just like, do this. You don't want to disrespect the spirits or the gods and stuff like that. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'll do the ritual, or I'll be respectful about it.
Yeah.
She's like, don't go there. That place is like this and stuff like that. And so but you're right. It's just this. There's a specific term for this. This kind of not assimilation.
Mm-hmm.
But this mixing of like religions and stuff like that, and how a lot of Mayan rituals and stuff like that, or a lot of older like indigenous traditions and rituals and celebrations survive by being by saying like, oh, it's Catholic, or like we put Catholicism over this, and like being integrated into Catholicism.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there's in the Catholic community itself, like in areas like in Mexico and Guatemala and stuff like that, there's like purists,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and there's people who are just like, no, this is okay, and stuff like that. And just how much the actual Catholic Church is against these things,
mm-hmm.
but they can't kill it.
Yeah,
they can't. They're trying to actively try to be like, no, this is wrong, you shouldn't do this, but it's just so ingrained in these people.
Yeah.
And it's like, and what it is that they do, and like a lot of people respect it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you gonna make them disrespect it and stuff like that? Especially mm-hmm. when they firmly believe that this works, that this is real and stuff like that. But like that, like in the Vatican and everything, and like from priests and stuff like that, they don't actively like all these things. They think they're like, oh no, that's wrong, you shouldn't be doing this, but the people don't pay attention.
Yeah,
especially because like when you think about it, these people have been doing these rituals for millennia.
Yeah,
like these rituals are older than the Catholic Church mm-hmm. itself, and these people are not going to give it up.
Yeah,
and I hope they don't.
Dude, there was this one time my mom went to go pick up my cousin, and my cousin's hair was like all like she was all messed up in her head. So she said, bring me some ribbons and I'll go trenzas. I'm going to braid your hair.
Mm-hmm.
So she brings this bag, this this paper bag, like all wrinkly and stuff. And she's like, oh, there's ribbons in here. So my mom opens it and she sees this doll wrapped in colorful ribbons with like a oracion.
Uh-huh.
How do you say that?
A prayer.
But like,
or incantation.
Incantation, yeah. Uh-huh. So apparently it was a spell that her mom was doing towards her husband, which is my mom's brother.
Uh-huh.
And so she took the doll, and then his wife came one day to the house. She's like, you took something of mine, give it back. And my mom was like, I'm not giving that back. Because when we uncovered the doll, there was pictures of my uncle with safety pins. Well, not safety pins, with needles.
Straight pins.
Mm-hmm. The straight pins. And like,
I was like
that.
And I found the bag myself, looking through my sock drawer. And my mom was like, you found something? And I go, yeah. She goes, what did you think? I'm like, are you doing that stuff to my dad? She's like, why didn't you ask me about it? And I'm like, because you were gonna get mad at me for snooping,
because I find a doll about me next.
And she's like, and then she explained to me what happened, and I was like, well, doesn't that break the spell? Like, if you find it, it breaks the spell. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't know, we're supposed to unwrap it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, so we unwrapped it together, and that's when we saw the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But this shit is scary. Like, you find it, and then like you feel like cold water washing uh-huh. over you. I'm like, oh shit!
Like, you get that like chills effect, even though I don't believe in it.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's so many like old wives' tales and myths and things that our grandmothers, our mothers have passed down for years and years. And I was laughing the other day because I was telling Jen, I am not very religious. I actually have probably since high school identified as being atheist. But goddamn, I believe that I have this grano on my tongue because I didn't have Korean barbecue.
So true. So true. That for sure.
And like and stuff like that, like home remedies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like we grow like a bunch of herbs in front of my house and stuff like that. And sometimes when I feel sick or stuff like that, or I'm coming down with something, I just pick that. I ground it up and stuff like that. And I'd be like, medicine?
Yeah.
I can make my own medicine.
Yeah.
Right.
And who knows if it's a what is it?
Placebo.
Uh-huh. The placebo effect or whatever, but I do feel better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like, and like, I have that, like, but I was like, placebo effect. I know this is you, but I'm still going to do it.
Yeah. What works, works.
What works, works. Yeah.
This book basically kind of had us relive these things that we grew up with, which I love.
And stuff like that. And so that's why I like the last story and stuff like that, because of the brujeria and all that stuff. And the end as well, like how creepy it was.
Yeah, the end was creepy.
The end was like super creepy and stuff like that. And it very much fit with a lot of the oral stories that I would get from my mom and stuff like that, about how someone does something and like they don't mean to for it to be bad, but it comes back and bites them and stuff like that. I really like that. And I feel like the last story did a good job.
Yeah.
And also it's called Put a Little Chile on It.
Yeah, I didn't know where they were going with this. And then I read and I was like, oh, this is awesome. But one of my favorite lines was when the enchantress? No. Mm-hmm. Curandera?
Curandera,
yeah. Yeah. Where she's like, do you think Adam threw away eternity for a crack at someone? It's like, it kind of like describes like kind of because we all eat chile, so it just kind of describes like how we always have to have a little bit of spice in our life. Yeah. I really loved it.
Yeah.
The art overall was amazing.
Yeah really
it was really good. Yeah. I can't wait to read what other stories they come up with. And I know that I actually was on a panel with Eric when he was talking about how he and his artist were like fighting back and forth of the stories that were the same, kind of the same, but like one family said it one way and another family said it another way, and like fighting back and forth of what was the right way. So I'm really interested to see some more iterations of maybe myths and stories that had been passed down in my family, and like what kind of take that they put on it.
Mm-hmm. Or which ones they decide to use, or whether they all fuse them together.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. Yeah,
It's really cool because like in English it's the Grim Reaper, so he's male apparently. Mm-hmm. But in Spanish is La Santa Muerte, which is female.
Yeah.
And then there's Neil Gaiman, who has Death, which is female. So it's like all these different takes on the same thing. I love it.
Yeah.
Are we going to rate it now, or should we wait till the end?
I feel like my opinions on both of these are different.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like we should rate them differently.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
And for this one, I will give I'll give it 3 conchas.
Yep.
Because I really liked it. And I really liked the stories. And I like that little blast from the past of like sitting down and my mom telling me horror stories to get me to like eat stuff. Or to like go to bed.
I know. Okay. First of all, the kukui. My mother used to scare me with that thing all the time. And, oh, the kukui's going to come get you. And I'm just like, how do you expect me to want to go into my bedroom by myself in the dark when you're telling me that this thing, this monster is going to get me?
And so, the thing is, el kukui, he's never described.
Yeah.
He's never.
Like, no one has a description for this weird mystery creature. But you know damn sure I've used it against some kids. I'm just like, el kukui.
So this is Kristen, and I also give it 3 conchas. I loved all the stories. I love the art. I can't wait to see what's coming out in future episodes. And just like the creep show factor was just in and of itself amazing. I'm so excited to have something in that vein not only be an ongoing, but also be all the way themed around Latinx culture. So 3 conchas for sure.
This is Sarah, and I'm going to give it tres conchas along with a cup of de limón. And the cup of de limón is because is because when I was a kid, I would drink de limón. I would go outside in the back and cut off a leaf and bring it back and have my de limón. Mm-hmm. And this is very much something that I grew up with, like the creep show kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. So a cup of de limón for me, and that's lemongrass for you guys who don't know what the limón
is. I would definitely say that mine would be three conchas and a cup of hierbabuena.
Oh, snap. Yes.
Uh-huh. And hierbabuena is, for those of you who don't know, it's peppermint.
Yes.
And my grandmother grew it in the backyard, and whenever I complained about a stomach ache or menstrual cramps or anything, she would say, let me make you some hierbabuena, and she would go out and pick it and boil it, and she'd bring me this tea, and it cured every ailment every time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it wasn't until college that I figured out spearmint and hierbabuena were the same thing. I was just like, what? I'm sorry? And same thing with rula, that it's wormwort?
Wormwort.
And I was just like, so when it was like in stories and stuff, I was just like, what the hell is wormwort?
Right.
And then, but like wormwort and ruda never clicked.
Yeah.
And I was just like, to me, ruda is like, you know, made for tea and for curing illnesses and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And sometimes stomach you burn aches. It.
You keep it in the cupboard with a little thing of olive oil. And then whenever you have an earache, you stick it in your ear and it's gone. Yeah.
And the pain is gone.
Dude, I kid you not. I just learned that the limon was lemongrass like 6 months ago. I just learned that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I wanted to grow some of my own. So I had to go and find out what was the English version.
You know what's funny is that a lot of stores have the, they call it Hispanic foods, I think. but it's funny because everything in that section is in the little baggies, like they're plastic with the whatever. And they have all the Spanish names on it. But every single thing in that aisle you can find in its American
version.
Packaging version somewhere else in the store.
Yeah. So yeah, like for me, like the Italian one, do you know how long it took me to find out that manzanilla was chamomile?
Oh, yeah. I know. And the only reason I found out was because Gwen Stefani said about sipping on her chamomile tea. Uh-huh. And I was like, what the heck is the
chamomile?
What's chamomile?
Yeah. And so
manzanilla.
Yeah, and it's manzanilla.
Yeah.
And I thought for the longest, I kid you not, that manzanilla translated to in English to little apple.
Yes,
I thought my whole life. Yeah, and
that's funny
because it's manzanilla. And so for the longest, like I'm talking like literally up to 2 years ago, I did not know that chamomile and manzanilla were the same thing.
Yeah.
So my side cup would be té de manzanilla.
Yeah. And in the Hispanic food section, it'll have the Spanish, and then in English, it'll be in parentheses. So if you want to find out what all those things that your grandmothers and mothers made for you, go to that section and you'll be able to find out what the translation is.
Yeah.
That's so cool. All right, well, that's a good rating. We're actually reviewing another book.
Yep, because it's Halloween and we have another scary book to read. And this one is Tales of Terror by Eduardo Risso. And this is actually another, not creep show style, but this is in the vein of old EC horror comics. Mm-hmm. And I have not really read any EC horror. I've just seen tons of covers, and I love the covers.
All of them.
So when I saw this, I was like, this is awesome. This is amazing. Eduardo Risso is actually an Argentinian comic creator. And this is the first time, it's a bound book of 12 different stories. And this is the first time not only that these stories have been collected, but that they have been offered in English as a translation.
What?
So,
they went Spanish first?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And
my mind is totally blown.
As I was reading it, I would love to actually read the Spanish because I feel like there's some loss of translation in there.
Yeah, I feel like there's
some. No, not trying to drag the translator because I'm sure you did. It was an amazing job. I mean, but you know that there's just in Spanish, there's just. I mean, in English, sometimes there's no ways to directly translate Spanish words or Spanish. Like there's a lot of emotion and feeling that come in Spanish, and you're saying certain words, but what they mean is not what they're actually saying, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'd love to actually read the Spanish ones and kind of see what the difference is.
I totally agree with you. I was in the car riding with my nephew and I said también, mm-hmm. like, you know, in Spanish. And he's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, oh, crap. I got to give you like two sentence full to kind of describe what I'm trying to say with one word in Spanish. Yeah. So it was like, it didn't dawn on me that it's mm-hmm. there's sometimes such a difficulty to get your point across when you're translating.
Yeah, and I especially felt in some of the stories where I was just like, if this was said in Spanish, it would be more impactful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me yeah. too.
Especially the kind of romance one.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. like, to me, like, how he was phrasing it was like, there's a difference between, like, you know, saying eternity in English and eternidad.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Uh-huh. And like, and just personally for me, Spanish is... when I say something in Spanish, I mean it more.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it carries more emotional
yeah.
weight.
Yeah. For me. Sighs in Spanish.
But but overall, I did like Tales of Terror.
Uh-huh.
I liked the art style.
Yes, I really like it's all black and white.
Yes.
Very noir. Uh-huh. Yes, very, very completely. Noir.
Very, very noir. A lot of the stories, kind of, not all of them, because they all take place in different times and mm-hmm. different places, but a lot of them have kind of a mafioso,
yeah.
like mm-hmm. Depression era vibe.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Which, yeah, the noir style, kind of like that. So that was really interesting, and I usually kind of like that.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite one was the one about the blind man. I also feel like it could have ended better or more intriguing.
Yeah.
But I think that one was my favorite one. Because it's about the black sheep of a family, has a gambling problem,
mm-hmm.
wins a business.
Yes.
Via gambling. But the person who lost, it's being told from the point of view of the person who lost, who I'm guessing is a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to give it up.
Yeah, so to that dirty Mexican, yeah, he says.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
And so he keeps upping the stakes mm-hmm. and kind of saying, and kind of being like, he thinks he can outwit him. And so the kind of the Mexican man doesn't take the role of El Diablo, but a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In that he's blind and he's like the black sheep of the family. And he won a piece of land from...
Do you know that not until right now you're talking about him being blind, did I know that he was blind?
Me too. I was like, he was blind?
I know. I was like, that makes the that makes story sense, have a completely different meaning to me now.
Yeah.
Because he had to do a maze and this dude thought that he was going to win.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, like, was the maze that hard? But it was because he was blind.
And I totally missed that part.
But I love the other maze, which... Uh-huh. He said, it's simple, but you're not going to get it. And I was like, blew my mind. Totally.
Yeah. And then like the last one, how he kept talking about like, oh, like I have a maze. It's a lot simpler, but a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And like that turn of phrase, the kind of words, that's why I kind of thought he had kind of the El Diablo role.
Mm-hmm.
But also... And you can kind of like infer that maybe because he obviously has gambling problems and stuff like that. But he was not going to be cheated out of what he thought as rightfully his. And I found that story a lot more. I that has to be one of my favorites.
So a lot of the stories I was telling Jen, it's funny because it's Tales of Terror. And I think in 2018, a lot of people hear the word terror and all of a sudden they start to think of gore and like violence and all that. And none of these, not that none of these, there's violence in some of these stories, but a lot of them, the terror is just really like a twist surprise ending. Mm-hmm. And it's an old school, like I said, in the vein of EC Comics, like, and also Twilight Zone and like those kinds of things. It's those kinds of stories. And I really enjoyed them. My favorite one was the last, very last one with the
mixing the classes.
Yes, with the couple.
That. Oh my
and
God. I didn't know where it was going.
I was
going
to say, I was actually genuinely surprised at that ending.
Yeah.
I loved it as well. I was like, again, mind blown. I mean, I'm going to say that throughout this whole comic book, but totally. You guys gotta read that. It's so good.
So it is available from Diamond. That's where we got it. And we're talking a lot about the art. And the art is also an Argentinian. And his name is Carlos Trillo.
Okay.
And these are 11 short stories. 11 or 12?
11. I think is it 11?
Yeah, okay. I numbered them.
11 okay. short stories. And touching back upon what you said about what terror is. And like that's one of my criticisms is that it's the surprise endings sometimes don't come as a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of tell what they are.
Yeah.
That or it's just weird.
Yeah.
And it's not terror. I'm just like, maybe public humiliation is very terrifying for some people. But personally to me, I'm just like, yo, get over it.
Yeah. I mean, for me in the beginning, I was very underwhelmed with the stories and I had to change my mindset of what I was expecting in the stories. And when I did that and when I enjoyed them for what they were, I think I did myself a favor because I enjoyed them a lot more. But there definitely were some where you kind of knew exactly where it was going and it wasn't really a surprise. And there were some that were funny and the ending was a little bit more humorous. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I think that the stories and coupled with the art was done really, really well.
Yeah, I feel like a more appropriate title, but they probably couldn't do it because of rights or whatever, would have been Tales of Suspense.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's Marvel, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I liked chapter 10 because it talked about climate change.
Oh, yeah.
It hadn't been funny.
And, you know, it just kind of spoke to me because I was such a big fan of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I also read the book and it's different. But the climate change and then him stepping into the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is so my 1994 me, like, and it was just really well done. I loved it. I felt like they looked at my diary and read some passage I had about like the longing for, you know, your dad during that movie, because I actually cried in that movie because of the ending. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, but from a movie from 1994 or 95 or whatever. But the way I felt about that movie ending and the way that this chapter was written, it mirrors that. It's kind of an homage, a nod to or whatever, but I loved it.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. But that's not to say that I didn't love all the other stories as well. Like, I loved the last chapter was amazing. And then the one where the guy who had, like, no... I think he might have been autistic or something, who had no feeling. He just kept going, So, I loved it all. I was in the right mindset at the time. It was great. I was actually, when I read these both, Phantasmagoria and this one, I was listening to Beethoven's as played by the Chicago Symphony, and it was just right in the right vein. Like, it was just like perfect setting.
Yeah.
Got a little candlelight. You know, romantic. But yeah, no, I love this. I love both these books.
That's funny. When you said Frankenstein, you read the book. I actually like the book. The Modern Prometheus. But that's because
yeah.
I was an English major.
Yeah. So, Sarah, I will let you review this book first.
Oh, okay. Well, this one, I'm going to go Tres Conchas. with this. I really loved it. Maybe a glass of wine to go along with that. But yes, no, I really, 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 really loved it. I liked the direction all these chapters took me in. And the first one, like you said, it was a little bit kind of like hard to kind of wrap your head around. But after that, it was like I got my mindset. I got the music going. It was great. It was perfect. Perfect setting for me.
Well, this is Kristen, and I'm going to give it 2 conchas. Like I said, I was underwhelmed by some of the stories. I let myself have higher expectations of horror, I guess, but then had to realize that the definition of horror is vast and to know kind of where these stories were going. Once I read a couple, I kind of shifted my expectations, but they were good. I really liked them a lot, and I think the black and white really served the stories really well, and I definitely would recommend that people pick this up for the holiday coming up for Halloween.
Yeah. I'm kind of stuck because out of all of them, I really only liked like two or three.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, this is 11 stories.
Yeah.
And it's a full graphic novel. So I don't want to give it one.
Yeah.
But I also don't think it deserves the full two. But we'll go, I'll just give it the two anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Like grudgingly.
Yeah.
It's going to be a grudging two. Because I did like the artwork.
Yeah.
And those, I feel like the two, those, the last couple of stories were very worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it, they definitely made it worthwhile reading the other stuff like mm-hmm. that. And it's also interesting to see kind of this throwback to the older comics and just like people's different perceptions of terror or like what horror is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give it like, because we've read a bad book.
Yeah,
we've read a bad horror book that was it was awful, and not like in that it was like the horror awful like that was good. No, it was just like it was terrible, like terribly written, terribly drawn. So yeah, I'm gonna give it two because thinking about that now, thinking about that other comic, it deserves a two because it did a lot better. Okay, never mind. I am a firm two conchas.
All right. Well, that was our rating, guys. It's time for On My Radar. And On My Radar is the Sandman universe, guys. Of course, we have Sandman number one that just came out. And it's freaking amazing. And also, it's so cool because all these books are going to tie in. And right now, I just read The Dreaming number one. And it ties in so well with the Sandman universe. And apparently, they're all going to tie in. Lucifer, Books of Magic, and Whispering Castle. Whispering Winds?
House of Whispers.
House of Whispers. Thank you. So I'm just going to say this. Can I have that on my pull list, please? That is on my radar, guys.
Yes. So was there a podcast that you actually started reading that had something to do with this?
Yes. Shout out, saludos to podcast that I listen to now. It's Sandman Salon, where they discuss these books in great detail, and it's pretty damn good. So if you guys are in search of another podcast and you have a lot of time on your hands and you read Sandman and you love it, definitely take listen to them. They're pretty amazing. They have 3 episodes up as of right now.
Awesome. So Mrs. Kristen and I have a quick juntos y fuertes for this episode, and it's not really comic related, but it is Latinx related, and I think it's also something that's very important. What I'm sharing today is a website called Therapy for Latinx. It's therapyforlatinx.com, and it's an online database that makes it easy for Latinx people to find mental health professionals in their own communities. I think that it's super important when you are seeking out therapy to find a therapist that you are comfortable with and that understands where you're coming from as far as your background and how culture can sometimes play an issue. I worked for many years with domestic violence survivors, and specifically with immigrant women who were survivors of domestic violence, and religion was a huge thing in their community. And so just coming out and telling them you need to leave your husband was not an option. It was a lot of working with him and talking to them about their options and what the different things in their community, resources that were available to them, and getting them to understand that they didn't deserve it. And at some point, if they decided to leave, then to support them in that, but to also understand that their religion a lot of times was not in support of them leaving their husbands, mm-hmm. and to support them around that. And so when you have a therapist who understands your culture and understands how that can affect the decision decisions you're making, I think it's a way more amazing experience in your therapy seeking and in your sessions. So definitely, if you are looking for giving resources or yourself looking for a therapist who is sensitive to your needs and issues, therapy for Latinx.com is a resource out there for you.
Absolutely, I agree. There's a lot of stigma. Sometimes they're like, it's all in your head.
Yes.
You're not sick. It's all in your head.
Yeah.
You're just bored, mm-hmm. you know, and that has a lot to do with, like, your upbringing. So I think this is wonderful, wonderful news that there's somebody out there trying to help you find the right therapist for you.
Yeah, the founder of the database, actually, it came about, it was a woman who herself was having a very hard time finding a therapist that worked for her. And she thought to herself, if it's this hard for her to find a therapist who is Latina, which is what she was looking for, how much harder is it for monolingual people out there looking for somebody? Mm-hmm. And so that's why she put together this database.
Well, thank you for doing that, because I know that there's a lot of people that have that struggle. Thank you for sharing that, Kristen.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that brings us to the end of our episode. Any shout-outs? Any final thoughts?
Well, happy Halloween, everybody. I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but but hopefully it's near Halloween, whether before or after. I hope you had an amazing holiday and celebrated it to its full extent. Jen will be in Guatemala celebrating Dia de los Muertos and celebrating the life of her grandfather. And I just want everyone to have an amazing time. Don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Yeah. Everyone, happy Halloween and happy Dia de Muertos. Don't forget to honor your dead loved ones who have passed away. They are here with us all the time. Not malevolently, but always watching over us. And you can find us on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
Yeah, guys, don't forget to put out their favorite food and drink and a little picture of them con una velita. And always remember to be safe during Halloween. You can find us on Snapchat, and also you can email us at comadresycomics@gmail.com. Thank you guys for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye.
Bye.